You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Sin is a failure to bother to love. Yeah, that sort of blows your mind. And, you know, sin's a lot of other things. I mean, obviously, you know, it's murder and, you know, all those kind of terrible things. But stealing. But, you know, most of the time it's a failure to bother. We don't, you know, and in the gospel passages, you think of the parables of the rich man who passes over the poor person outside of his door, or even the priest and the Levite, you know, who pass the man lighting by the side of the road. They don't bother. So, you know, for a lot of us in the United States, it's like, yeah, whatever. There's refugees and there's poor people and there's people who are struggling and there are people of color who are really up against it, but you know, whatever, I'm just going to turn the TV off, you know, and just go about my day.
Nora, close your eyes, we're going under.
Welcome to the Deconstructionist Podcast, everybody. We are your hosts. I'm Adam Narlock.
I'm John Williamson. And this week we have Father Reverend James Martin.
Oh, man.
And I think you guys are going to enjoy this one. You may have seen him. He was a regular frequent guest on the Colbert Report when Colbert still had his show on Comedy Central.
Heck yeah.
He's a Jesuit priest, and he's editor-at-large of America Magazine, and he's a best-selling author of multiple books we'll have in the show notes, but specifically, he just came out with Seven Last Words and a book that you've been reading recently.
Oh, man, it's so good. The Jesuit Guide to, I think it's The Jesuit Guide to Almost Everything.
Yep.
It's so good. I'm about a third of the way through it. I just got it the other day, and I just can't put it down.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. I mean, he's been at all sorts of different TV channels, you know, Comedy Central, obviously, NPR, the BBC, the History Channel. He writes also part-time for the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and publications like that. Just a brilliant writer and just another example of how, you know, the oldest Christian denomination, if you want to put it that way, is just, you know, like, I think a lot of people kind of like look past it, you know, especially on the Protestant side, because we're like, yeah, we have nothing to learn from the Catholics because we've moved past that. We've graduated, you know.
Yeah.
But this guy has some fresh stuff that he's...
We're all like, yeah, watered down, you know, starchy evangelical Christianity didn't work for me, so I'm not even going to touch that deep, rich Catholicism. That's a bunch of weird stuff. I think my wife even said, I'm not confessing to a priest.
No.
I'm just not doing it.
Well,
I'm totally trying to like suggest like, hey, honey, think I might want to convert to something.
Seriously.
I'm not sure. I'm having an identity crisis.
I know.
Anyway, keep going.
Well, we talked about it the other day. We're like, man, if we could find a Jesuit priest to start an evangelical worship style church.
Oh my gosh. Well, didn't you say that if we could get like an amazing musician to do some like great, like beautiful, like liturgical music,
yeah,
and have a Jesuit and a Jewish mystic,
yes,
like run the like services.
Yeah, we were going to get James Truslow and Clay Kirchenbacher to be the worship leaders,
yeah, Oh my gosh.
Then get Art Green and Father James Martin to co-lead this thing called The Collective, and it would be amazing.
You shouldn't have put it out there, man.
I know.
Now people are going to want to make it happen.
I know. Please, please do.
Love Pete Rollins' guest lecture.
Yeah, yes.
Anyway, let's get to the interview.
Oh, man. So you guys are going to enjoy this one. He's very active on social media. I highly recommend his Twitter feed.
Oh, highly recommend his Twitter feed.
I think he's really putting some stuff out there, especially lately based off of things happening in the news and a lot of social stuff. That needs to be heard.
Absolutely.
And he's got the authority to say it. So, without further ado,
James freaking Martin. And Nora, close your eyes, we're going under. Well, Father James Martin, thank you. Welcome to the Deconstructionist Podcast. John and I are just delighted to have you here. We've been excited about this for a really long time. Thanks for hanging with us tonight.
My pleasure.
So before we get started, for those of our listeners who aren't as familiar with your background, tell us a little bit about what you do and how you got into the work that you currently do.
Sure. I'm a Jesuit priest. I'm editor-at-large of America, which is a Catholic magazine, and I also write books. As part of my work here at America. And before I entered the Jesuits, I went to the Wharton School of Business and worked for 6 or 7 years, actually 6 years at GE in corporate finance and human resources. And as part of my Jesuit training, I did ministry all over the place, including in East Africa with refugees. I studied philosophy and theology. I was ordained in 1999, and ever since then, I've been working at America. And that is my life in 1 minute.
Man, that was really concise. Well done.
Thank you.
So, for a lot of people that listen to the show, we come from all different backgrounds, but encountering your work just really made me more fascinated with a figure from history, St. Ignatius, and the Jesuits in general. And for a lot of us that just don't know what that is or, what's going on with that, could you kind of give us an overview of who the Jesuits are and a little bit about their founder and why that kind of caught you up and how you found yourself with them?
Sure. The Society of Jesus, also known as the Jesuits, is a Catholic religious order of men founded in 1540 by St. Ignatius Loyola, who was a Basque or, Spaniard, who had a conversion experience, in the 16th century that led him from being a kind of, a sort of free living guy. He was a soldier in the army. He was kind of a ladies' man. And he turned around his life and started a religious order to basically, as he said, help souls, which is a very broad mandate. And today, the Society of Jesus, the Jesuits, are, I think, the largest religious order of men. I think we're 15,000, 20,000, something like that, all over the world.
Wow.
And in the United States, we're mostly known for our educational ministries. So our colleges and universities like Georgetown, Boston College, Fordham University, all the universities named Loyola, of course. And then our high schools and middle schools and community colleges, even. We just started a community college for poor people in Chicago. And but we also run retreat houses, we run parishes, we do pretty much everything. I have Jesuit friends who are physicians. I have a friend who's an astronomer at the Vatican Observatory. A friend of mine is the Catholic chaplain at San Quentin Prison in California. So on and on and on. You can, as many different ways of serving God there are as, as many different ways of being a Jesuit that there are.
So they're not like monks. Like Jesuits are just like...
I always say we're kind of like monks in the world. The idea is, we are contemplatives in action. That's the idea. And St. Ignatius, at the time, in the 1540s, the orders would have been either contemplative orders, like monastic orders. There are, of course, the Franciscans who were active. But Ignatius really wanted us to be out in the world. And he wanted, as he said, our monastery to be the world. So we're very active. We're priests and brothers. That means ordained and not ordained. And, doing pretty much anything that needs to be done, in the church and in the and in the world. You know, as part of my ministry, for example, or my training as a Jesuit, I worked with East African refugees, helping them start small businesses as part of the Jesuit Refugee Service. So that's, you know, that's one thing we do.
Oh, wow.
Most Jesuits, I think, most of them would be in either education or parish life or retreat houses. But, you know, as I said, they do all sorts of things. The old joke is if you've met one Jesuit, you've met one Jesuit.
Yeah, there's a lot of diversity there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, tell us a little bit about the Jesuit kind of form of spirituality, just in how it's, a you know, it's pretty unique. It's, you know, we find it incredibly interesting.
Well, it is. It's the shorthand version is finding God in all things. And what does that mean? That means that God is to be found not only in, you know, within the walls of the church on Sunday, and not only, you know, when you're sitting down and praying, and not only when you're reading the Bible, and not only when you're doing spiritual ministries overtly called, but also, you know, listening to a podcast or meeting up with a friend for, you know, a drink or a cup of coffee, or, you know, playing with your child or looking at nature. So God is to be found in every moment, and every moment is an invitation to find God. And therefore, every moment is an invitation to be, once again, what Ignatius calls the contemplative in action, the person who is living an active life, you know, because most of us aren't monks. Some of us are, of course, but most of us are not. And so we're called to live that active life and find God in the midst of that activity. So it's a very user-friendly spirituality. It's very helpful. It's really changed a lot of lives.
So if we could, very briefly, before we get into, because I really want to get into some of your current work and one of the books that you wrote that I really enjoyed called Seven Last Words. Before we get into that, though, you wrote the foreword for another guest we had on the show, Dr. Martin Marty, on a book on the Reformation, which I thought was very interesting because the book, I was kind of surprised. I thought the book was just going to be this historical account of the importance of the Reformation for Protestantism. But it was very much about this reconciliation between primarily the Lutheran Church and the Catholic Church, and I thought it was neat that you wrote the foreword to it.
Yeah.
Well, my joke was that the only reason I wrote the foreword, or the real reason, I'm being facetious, of course, was that I wanted to have it be said that it was James Martin on Martin Marty on Martin Luther.
I like
it. It's a Martin overload.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I am certainly not a scholar of the Reformation, but I really appreciated what he was trying to do in that book, which was not only to, you know, give people a kind of a different vantage point of the Reformation. You know, he knows more about the Reformation than, you know, probably all of us have forgotten put together.
That's true.
And I think it's the opposite. He's forgotten more than all of us know.
There you go.
You know, there is this kind of continuing drawing together. And I think just a few weeks ago, the Catholic Church and the Lutheran Church signed this declaration saying that that the stuff that had divided them, you know, justification by faith, all that kind of stuff, was actually, that didn't divide them anymore. That, you know, the theologians on both sides realized that, you know, both sides had good insights. And so it's great. And it's a great time to kind of be looking at that. And Pope Francis, I think, went to, I believe, Sweden a couple months ago to mark the anniversary.
Never mind the storm that keeps us in at night, the cold rain on the leaves, the wind is much too much, but you and I are safe here laughing at the table.
You gotta love Pope Francis, man. Isn't he a Jesuit?
He is a Jesuit. That's right. In fact, most people know the Jesuits now, thanks to him. You know, and he's a good model of a Jesuit. You know, he's very free. That's one of the hallmarks of Jesuit spirituality. You try to be free of anything that keeps you from, you know, responding to God's will. So that's him. He's a very free guy, which I think really appeals to people.
Absolutely. One of the things that Adam and I found ourselves in deep conversation about last night was just this tragedy that occurred amongst what was intended to be peaceful protesting in Virginia. And Adam and I both independently happened to see your tweet thread and thought it could not have been put more succinctly. I think this is, you know, as Christians who strive to to follow the teachings of Jesus, I find it harder and harder to stay apolitical, which is something that we've tried very hard to do on our show, to stay as neutral as humanly possible. But I find it getting more and more difficult to do so as time goes on. And without rehashing all of the tweet thread, it's amazing. I think people should go to your Twitter feed and go read it for themselves.
Absolutely.
But you point out a couple things that I think are worth mentioning, are kind of like, you know, moments where you're like, well, of course, but I think there are things that we forget. And you point out the fact that our Savior happens to be a Jew. He was Jewish.
Yeah.
And the fact that just to support any sort.
So was his mom, and so were all the disciples.
Yes.
So was Joseph too, you know?
Yeah, why is it that things, simple things like that, we forget? I mean, you know, Jesus himself was a Middle Easterner, and yet we see this intense persecution of people of Middle Eastern descent. Yeah, it seems antithetical.
It's too hard to think about that for some people. And, you know, the other thing I like to remind people is that he was also the victim of capital punishment.
Yep. Yes.
And he was also on death. And he was also on death row. You know, the night before his execution. So, you know, when you try to really remind people of the reality of Jesus's life, it's very frightening to people who want to keep him in this little box of, you know, someone who's just your friend. And, you know, Jesus is my friend, but you know, he's also more than that. And his teachings should be very disturbing to people. But, you know, this whole thing about white supremacy, that is the opposite of what Jesus was all about. I mean, you know, he critiqued the disciples who wanted to be first in the kingdom of God. You know,
yes.
He said the people who should be first are the ones who are last. And, you know, you should act like children. You should be servants. I mean, on and on and on. So this idea of supremacy is totally anti-Christian. I mean, I don't think you need to do, that's why I could have done, that's why I did that in a couple tweets. I mean, you know, it was easy to kind of spell that stuff out really quickly.
Yeah.
It's absolutely amazing how just some succinct contemplative reflection on, you know, what it really is that we see in the Gospels and, you know, what church history tells us just cuts right through everything that's happening here so powerfully and so unbelievably succinctly. Just, you know, the idea that empire in America could be this thing that can be, you know, trumpeted when, you know, the life of Christ was a life of humility. It's foot washing.
Mm-hmm.
It's enemy love. It's mm-hmm. It's so obvious. And it's so funny to me how...
Go ahead. It's obvious, but it's not preached. And I think one of the problems is that, you know, the so-called prosperity gospel is this idea that if you believe in God or believe in Jesus Christ, all these great things are going to happen to you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think believing in God is the great thing that happens to you. And certainly I believe God helps us and God's on our side. But, you know, it doesn't mean that, you know, you're going to get rich, you know, simply because you believe in Jesus. It doesn't mean that your life's going to be free of suffering. And it especially doesn't mean that you can just sit back and you know, keep your prejudices and your racism and your hatred.
I mean, right.
Jesus is not this big rubber stamp on everything that makes you feel good.
That's so good. Yeah, it's like people just want to use, you know, Jesus to just enable whatever it is that they're doing. Or, you know, if I, like you said, if I believe in God or if I believe in Jesus, he's just going to fill my pockets with idols, you know, because that's what he's going to do. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, the irony is, you know, he asks us to lead a very simple life. I mean, he says, give up everything to the rich young man.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's so much of the Christian message of the Gospels that is just, it was hard back then and it's still hard. And I think the difference is today we have, you know, different Christian leaders who are telling us that it's okay to believe these things. It's okay to not help the poor. It's okay to be racist. It's okay. Well, they don't say that overtly, but they might as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's okay to, you know, like, keep out refugees and strangers. But you know, I mean, Jesus is really clear about this stuff. And, you know, sometimes I tweet things or I put things on Facebook and people freak out and I say, hey, listen, you know, don't get mad at me. You can get mad at Jesus. This is coming from the Gospels. It's pretty clear.
And to me, isn't this sense of apathy almost as destructive as, you know, the person that's out there, you know, rioting as well? Like, isn't that just the same as driving a nail, you know, as the person who's out there who's participating in these hateful crimes, especially as Christians?
Well, yeah, you know, in the Catholic Church, we celebrate today the feast of someone called St. Maximilian Kolbe. And I don't know if you've heard of him, but he was a Franciscan who was in Auschwitz in the concentration camp.
Oh.
And when a married man was going to be killed, he stepped forward and offered his life for him. Right. So it's a really incredible story. And he died in Auschwitz and he's canonized. And a quote that I saw from him today that I love that I tweeted out was, the greatest poison of our time is indifference.
Mm.
And it's true. I mean, that's what happens. One of my theology professors, a guy named Jim Keenan at Boston College, had a great insight. And he said that in the Gospels, Jesus doesn't critique people who are weak and struggling, you know, which makes sense if you think about it, right?
Yeah.
He critiques people who are strong and don't bother.
Mm.
And so for Jim Keenan, which I love, sin is a failure to bother to love.
Whoa.
Yeah, that sort of blows your mind. And, you know, sin's a lot of other things. I mean, obviously, you know, it's murder and, you know, all those kind of terrible things, but stealing. But, you know, most of the time it's a failure to bother. We don't, you know, and in the gospel passages, you think of the parables of the rich man who passes over the poor person outside of his door, or even the priest and the Levite, you know, who pass the man lighting by the side of the road.
Yeah.
They don't bother.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, for a lot of us in the United States, it's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
There's refugees and there's poor people and there's people who are struggling and there are people of color who are really up against it, but you know, whatever, I'm just going to turn the TV off, you know, and just go about my day.
It's almost as if the machine has gotten too large to the point where it doesn't affect us individually enough to the point where we can flip the TV off.
Yeah, and I also think we're just lazy. And we have not been, I think it's a kind of a failure of what we call catechesis of teaching. I think it really is a failure of the mainstream churches to really teach what Christianity is about. And it is not about just simply feeling good about yourself. That's part of it, I think, you know, because God wants us to love ourselves, but it's hard. You know, Jesus said, take up your cross, not, you know, sit on your easy chair.
Oh, man, we're nodding our heads over here.
Oh, totally loving this.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, Christianity, you know, that doesn't mean it's bad or it's unpleasant or it's, you know, negative or it's, you know, ends up at a terrible thing. But, you know, it's difficult.
Well, but this is the path towards life. And, you know, I want to get into some of the things you teach as a Jesuit and some of your really great writings. But this is the path of Jesus is not, you know, you're going to live this miserable life because that's the only way you're going to get God to love you and you got to just beat yourself up and it's masochistic. No, 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 no. The whole, like, give up your life to find true life. Like, you're being called to a truer life than you could possibly imagine by your own selfishness. You know, your selfishness is too small.
And if you live by your own selfishness, you'll be miserable in the end. That's one of the, you know, the great insights, and that's what Jesus understands, that if you are just someone who's selfish and living for yourself, you know, we all know sort of examples of kind of rich people who end up bitter and angry, and, you know, that's the whole point, that life does not satisfy.
Mm.
And what Jesus is asking us to do is to, and this is the heart of Ignatian spirituality, this is what Ignatian spirituality or Jesuit spirituality highlights, which is that if you free yourself of anything that keeps you from getting closer to God, you will be happy, you will be joyful. It's a joyful life.
Yes.
It's, you know, you look at people like Francis of Assisi. You look at Pope Francis. I mean, there's a guy who, he enjoys himself. He's joyful. And that's the reason. It's
and free.
He's free.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody notices that about him, that he doesn't have to do this. He doesn't have to do that. He's always doing things that popes have never done before.
Yeah. There's a kid on stage tugging on his robes, and he's like, "Don't worry about it. He can stay."
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So this whole idea. Yeah. Go ahead.
He teaches, as they said about Jesus in the Gospels, with authority. His life and his words are congruent. People recognize that.
I love.
And they want it. They want it, and they want to be with him, and they want to be around him, and that's the appeal. That's the real appeal of religion. It's not, you know, follow me and you'll, you know, make a lot of money. He's not saying that at all.
Something better. I love your teaching, and it, you know, it must be a Jesuit teaching, but you talk a lot about these two concepts that I see linked. You know, I'm not, you know, I haven't been reading your work for a really long time. I've recently been introduced to it. So maybe you make this link yourself, but this idea of desire comes out in your work a lot. And this other idea of, I think it's Latin. Is it agere contra?
That's pretty good. It took me a while to figure out how to pronounce it. Agere contra.
Agere contra. Okay. Stinking Latin.
No, that's all right. Well, that's my Latin, so.
Yeah. Agere contra. So the cool link between these two things is, you know, obviously, you talk a lot about desire being this really important thing that gives us a sense of vocation. You know, it calls to us. You know, we listen to our desires, and it calls us to not just, you know, obviously God's love accepts us as who we are, but then calls us to be something more. And and that desire a lot of times requires, as you talk about for free living, that you have to learn to act against your selfishness. You have to learn to act against yourself. And I would wonder if you could. Am I making that link prematurely? Or?
No. That's a good link, actually. That's very perceptive. Desire is really at the heart of the spiritual life because, you know, at heart, you know, the great line from St. Augustine is, "Our hearts are restless until they rest in you, O God." There's this longing that we all feel. Everyone feels for something more, for some meaning, for something that's going to satisfy me. And that's the longing for God. That kind of dissatisfaction is one way that God calls to us. There's a desire to love, to have a fulfilling life, to be loved. I mean, this is all ways that God kind of calls us. God calls us together in marriage. God calls us together in friendship. You know, in terms of a vocation, you know, you're interested in something. You're attracted. Something appeals to you. That's desire. You know, you're attracted to it. But you're right. To be truly free and to respond to those desires in a free way, you sometimes have to sort of turn away from things that are unhealthy, you know? So, you know, for example, the example I always give is if you're in the hospital, you know, or you have a friend who's in the hospital, and I say, yeah, I'm not going to go because there's a lot of infections in hospitals, and I don't want to get sick. And, you know, you're being prevented from basically being a good person and you know, being a good friend, and that's going to get in the way of your desire of being a good friend. And so you need to kind of, agere contra means to act against. You kind of act against that. So it is, it's an interesting kind of counterintuitive.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you want to follow your deepest desires. That's the key.
Yeah.
But a lot of times there are these surface desires that you need to kind of turn away from, you know, kind of selfish desires basically. So yeah, that's a good link you made.
Well, it's like the Thomas Merton quote, you know, from No Man Is an Island. You know, why do we spend our lives striving to be something we would never want to be if only we knew what we wanted?
Exactly. Ugh. And that's also the difference between the false self and the true self. The false self is the self you think you have to present to the world. I think I've come up, well, not I've come up, but I think a word that helps me is cool. The false self is like cool.
Oh, that's so good.
You know, it's like, yeah, I'm on top of stuff. Everything's great. I'm like, everything's going great. I'm like, everything's fine. I'm fine. I'm cool. Everyone likes me. You know, I'm going to try to get everyone to like me. And, you know, that's baloney. The true self is the person you are before God, humble, vulnerable, real. And the key is just becoming your true self, becoming who God wants you to become, not this kind of, you know, mask, basically. And and desire comes into that too, you know, sort of, this is where Ignatius talks about St. Ignatius' discernment, like to really understand which voices are pulling you towards God and which voices are pulling you away from God.
Mm.
Yeah. This human desire to kind of protect our own ego at all costs, you know?
Yeah. Or to inflate our own ego.
Yeah.
In her arms, you'll never starve. You will never freeze. And when the world is is hard, you can fall asleep there. In a world of chaos, she could be.
I was gonna say, it's interesting. This is kind of a line of thought that we've heard from other Catholic speakers that we've had on. So I think I just converted to Catholicism. So thank you,
Richard Rohr.
You're welcome. Very welcome. Love to have you.
Oh man, I mean it's fascinating though, because one of my favorite parts about your book Seven Last Words, to kind of follow this line of thought, is that you talk about Jesus and his understanding of the importance of the giving of self in order to be reborn. It almost seems like a lot of us could learn that lesson, that there are not necessarily physically, but there are parts of us that just need to die before we can experience rebirth.
No, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, it's hard. People say take up your cross and they're like, well, what does that mean? And part of it does mean that there are parts of yourself, as you say rightly, that you have to let go of. You have to let them die. And, you know, those are the selfish parts of you, or the parts of you that are sometimes, you know, fearful. Or, you know, a lot of it, I think, relates to and can be helped by psychology and, you know, what parts do I kind of, where do I need to be freer? I think if you said that to people, they'd say, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Mm. But yeah, to let that die so that something new can live. And to let that go. To die to self. That's the great spiritual way of looking at it. It's very freeing. And that the resurrection is a pattern. It's not simply, I mean, I believe in that. It's not Jesus' resurrection from the dead, but there are kind of these mini resurrections that you have, you know, where something dies and something new is born, and you can kind of say, oh, okay, now I get it. I can let that go. You know, it's also about maturing too. Oh,
that's so good. A lot of the people.
It is good. This is all thanks to St. Ignatius and, of course, Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, we big fans of both.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, a lot of people that listen to our show, you know, we're called the Deconstructionists, is people that, a couple things I'd love to touch on, but I know we're running a little bit short on time, and we want to talk a little bit more about your work, you know, towards the end here. So I think it'd be really cool if you could touch on, you know, just quickly, a lot of the people that listen to this show have gone through some of what you call the six paths to God. So they've been in belief, you know, maybe they're in confusion right now, or disbelief, or return, or, you know, some of these things. And then if you could talk a little bit about that, and then weave in how I think that the Ignatian exercises are something that people that feel lost, disconnected, confused, detoxing from some bad church experience, you know, whatever, a lot of life can be found in some of those Ignatian exercises. I don't know if you could bring those two together somehow. Trying to just save time, yeah. But yeah.
No, sure. I'd say this. So in this book called The Jesuit Guide to Almost Everything, I mapped out six paths. I mean, this is just my way of looking at it.
Yeah, it's really
like
good.
There are six actual paths. Thanks. It was funny. Someone said to me, how'd you come up with that? And I was like, well, I just thought about it for a while.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like I did, you know, I didn't like do, you know, endless years of research. But yeah, I mean, there's six. Six, based on my experiences, there's six basic paths that got people take to God, and I list them out in the book. And that's based on just listening to people, and also my own life. You know, I mean, how do people come to God, and how do people find their way to God or religion? And the point is that, you know, everybody comes to God in their own way, right? But there are certain typologies that we can use. So, like the path of belief, someone that's always that's been born into a family that they've already believed, they always feel good about that. There's the path of return, where you kind of go away, and then you come back for a little bit. You know, these are just, this has been born out from people that I've met.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ignatian or Jesuit spirituality can help a person on those paths, because it takes seriously where each of those people are. Mm. And it says that God meets you where you are. And that if you are someone who, you know, I'm going to make something up, you know, who was raised Catholic and, you know, really fell away from the church during the sex abuse crisis, you know, which is certainly understandable.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of misses it and feels this pull back and says, well, what's going on? You know, you could say, well, what do you think's going on? You know, you think God might be calling you back as a more mature and even critical Catholic, you know, that's, you know, sort of fully aware of the sins of the church, but also aware of the beauty. And to take someone like that seriously is really part and parcel of Jesuit spirituality. You know, because if God is to be found in all things, God is also to be found in this person's path. And you don't say, oh, that's wrong, or that's not the way you're supposed to do it. Because, you know, how do we know people? You know, people came to Jesus in different ways.
Mm.
You know, you had a fisherman, you had tax collectors, prostitutes, people who were healed. You know, I was just reading the story of the great story in John of the woman at the well, the Samaritan woman. You know, and Jesus meets her, and she has five husbands, and he asks her for a drink of water, and then he talks about who he is, and then she's so excited, she tells everybody, and yeah, it's just a different way to coming to Jesus than, you know, Jesus coming up to Peter and Andrew and James and John and saying, follow me, or telling Matthew to, you know, follow me. It's just different. So, you know, you're going to say to the woman at the well, oh, that's wrong. The real way that you need to be called is God needs to come up to you and say, follow me. And she'll say, well, that wasn't my experience. You know, my experience was this. I had this kind of interesting life, and I met Jesus, and we were talking, and, you know, we went back and forth, and I was a little suspicious. So the whole point is you take the woman at the well, or the Samaritan woman, with as much seriousness as you take Peter. And you say both of those paths are real. And that's Jesuit spirituality. That you know, God takes you where you are, and we're going to try to help you find God in all that. So imagine if the woman at the well went to someone and told her this, told someone her story, and they said, that's incorrect. You know, she would be really upset, and she'd probably start to doubt herself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I love about Jesuit spirituality. It takes everybody, you know, where they are, and it uses every tool. That's the other thing, to reach people, because we don't know where they are. Mm. So, like, you know, I'm on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, and because that's where people are.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
So why would I say no? I'm not going to do that stuff, you know. And well, you know, all I'm going to do is preach in church or write books. You know, that's where people are these days. So why not go to where they are and speak their language?
Amen.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Amen.
Well, we want to be sensitive to your time, but so we want to finish off with one last question, and we definitely want to promote your new book and everything. So,
thank you.
Your latest book that just came out in June is called Building a Bridge, How the Catholic Church and the LGBT Community Can Enter into a Relationship of Respect, Compassion, and Sensitivity. So tell us a little bit about what this book is about and what your hopes are for this.
Sure. Well, the subtitle kind of says it all, but well, hopefully not all, because otherwise people won't buy it.
So but, concise.
Yeah, right. I know. My gosh, that subtitle. yeah, it's basically a call for dialogue and mutual respect and encounter between, you know, what I would call the institutional church. So that's, you know, the Vatican, the hierarchy, cardinals, archbishops, priests, but also people that work in any official capacity in the church, you know, lay people as well, and LGBT Catholics, who really have felt totally marginalized and excluded and insulted and ignored and slandered and everything by the church. And, you know, what happened was I was reflecting on the massacres in Orlando a little over a year ago. And I noticed that not too many bishops talked about that and really even extended sympathy to the LGBT community. Mm. And I thought, well, now why is that? Mm. You know, I mean, if this were, you know, God forbid, like in a Methodist church or something, you know, for example, Charlottesville, the terrible things that have happened in Charlottesville recently, you know, the bishops' conference came out with something, and bishops, local bishops, and which is they should, of course.
Yeah.
But with Orlando, it was this kind of silence among the majority of bishops. And so that prompted me to think about the whole topic. And I did a Facebook video, which got a lot of hits. And then I was invited to give a talk. And the talk was to accept an award called the Building Bridges Award. And so that's where the title of the book came from. So I'm trying to start some dialogue. And the reaction has been really interesting. I mean, the majority has been, you know, overwhelmingly positive, and people hugging me and literally, you know, crying and, you know, just at parishes. And I mean, really, really, not a day goes by that I don't get really nice letters and emails and stuff.
Mm.
But then from the far, far right, you know, like hysteria. I mean, just total anger about this topic that I would even bring it up. I'm a heretic, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm.
But, you know, it's similar to what we were talking about at the beginning of the conversation. I hate to tell people, but, you know, Jesus reached out to people in the margins, you know, like it or not.
Boom. Yep.
I mean, the woman at the well, She's a Samaritan from this hated group, religious/ethnic group, that the Jewish people in Judea and Galilee didn't like very much for a number of reasons. And, you know, he's going out to her. And by the way, he's making the hero of one of his stories a Samaritan.
Right.
So, you know, that's Jesus doing what, you know, modeling for us what we should be doing. And I think one of the things that infuriates people is this is going to sound it's not meant to be argumentative, but I think it's true. I think one of the things that infuriates people on the far, far right, very, very traditionalist Catholics, is that they know that they know at the very deep level that these stories do say that. That they are about inclusion. And I think it infuriates them. It's like when you say to someone who's rich, you know, or who's unforgiving, or who's mean, you know, like a quote from Jesus that's really blunt, like blessed are the poor.
Right.
Or I was a stranger and you welcomed me, and they freak out. And I think it's not only that they disagree with it, but they know, and it's that they actually agree with it, and they cannot bring themselves to say it. Because to bring themselves to say it would be to, I'm articulating this actually for the first time ever, to bring themselves to say it would mean a complete change of their life, and they cannot abide by that.
Yep. I don't know who said it, but it's anger is fear demonstrating itself in public.
Yeah, it's interesting.
You know, it's like, you're afraid of what this means for you.
That's and they know on a deep level that it's true. You know, it's like the rich young man. When Jesus meets the rich young man, this is about agere contra. Jesus, you remember the story, I'm sure. Jesus meets a guy who's rich, and Jesus says, you know, he says, what should I do to gain eternal life? And he says, well, you know, the commandments. And the guy says, yeah, I'm following all the commandments. And Jesus looks at him with love, the gospel says, and says that you have to do one more thing. Go and sell all you own and follow me. And now that's agere contra, because I think what's going on is that, you know, Jesus isn't saying to every single person, you have to sell everything you own. I think he's saying to this guy, now I know what's keeping you from following me, and it's wealth. That's agere contra. So you need to free yourself up to this. Get back to your original question. You need to free yourself up in order that you can follow your deepest desire. That's the connection. And he can't. And so in that great passage, it says, and he went away sad. You know, and I think that's the kind of the same emotion. But, you know, today I think it would be he went away angry.
Yeah, that's good.
Because I think if you said that to someone who's rich and who's a good person, I think anger would be much more common today.
Yeah.
So good.
And so, yeah, so this anger, I think that's, you know, there's other reasons why people don't agree with the book, but the deep anger is that, you know, the book points out to people the fact that Jesus really did reach out to those on the margins, and there is no one more on the margins of the Catholic Church than the LGBT person. No one. Everybody else feels welcome, or they try to make them feel welcome.
Wow.
So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to build a bridge.
Good for you.
That's fantastic. I don't know that we could end it any better,
note. That was perfect. I mean, there's like a million more questions I could ask you, but we'll have to save that for round two if you'd ever want to do this again.
Yeah, well, let's leave them wanting a little more, then they can go out and buy the book.
There you go.
Perfect.
Absolutely, and they should. They should.
Thanks.
So you mentioned that you have a social media presence, which Adam and I can attest to. We love following you on Twitter. You've got a great presence there and a great voice. Where else can people go to stay on top of what you're up to, you know, what you're currently working on?
Sure. Well, Facebook. I have a public Facebook page under Father James Martin S.J. It's pretty easy to find. Pops right up. Twitter, James Martin S.J. And then Instagram and Snapchat, too. But yeah, the big three would be Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I enjoy doing it. I really do. I like it. I consider it a ministry.
That's awesome. And then if they're watching Stephen Colbert ever, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Although I've been on the new show, just the old show. So yeah. I think I have to be a movie. I think I got to be a movie star before.
Come on, Stephen.
Oh, come on, Stephen.
Yeah, I know. Well, call him up and tell him.
Well, I know one of his writers, so I'm gonna email him tonight.
We'll call him right now, right when we get off the phone.
Yeah, good luck.
Well, we really appreciate you coming on. This has been a big dream for us. So thank you for taking the time out to talk to us.
That's really thoughtful. And thanks for all the good work you guys are doing. I mean, you're meeting people in another way that I don't meet people in normally, which is producing podcasts. I think that's great. That's a new medium. I think, if St. Paul were alive, he'd be doing a podcast right now.
Oh, man. Wow, that's like the biggest compliment we've ever gotten. Well, you've got a standing invitation here, Father Martin, anytime.
Thanks, my friend. And send me the podcast, and I'll be happy to send it around.
Oh, awesome. Absolutely.
Awesome. We will. Grace and peace to you, friend.
Same to you. God bless you.
Sweetest taste your armor, I can never more feel it, hold your arm.
John, I wanted that to be like an hour longer.
I know.
Than that was. I didn't get to, I have like literally probably 6 or 7 questions that I was like, I have to get to these. And then I had a whole bunch of other ones that were like, if we have time, I'll get to these. I didn't get to like any of them because he's just so good. And we went on so many little like fun little rabbit trails. But the Jesuit approach to spirituality, which by the way, I've been telling my wife I want to convert to become a Jesuit because I'm literally so into this dude's work right now. It's like the first time I read Rohr. I was like, where have you been all my life?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. My wife's at the mall. She doesn't know what, she didn't know what a Jesuit was or whatever. And she's kind of thinking I'm being super weird. And she's at the mall and she's like, so I saw somebody walking at the mall with a Nike shirt on with like the swoosh and it said Jesuit on it. And I was like, oh, I get it. And she's like, what do you mean? I was like, Jesuit, Nike, Jesuit. Like instead of just do it, Jesuit.
That's pretty funny.
That's terrible. But yeah, the Jesuit approach to spirituality is like, I think in a way that we couldn't have planned because we never planned this.
Right.
This whole like transcendence within eminence, like get away from the escapism theology, get away from the 6 inches off the ground theology, you know, the pie in the sky, the, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, what about now? What about the reality that I'm swimming in, that I'm locked into, that's important, that has depth here? Jesuit spirituality is all about that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because, like, he's a Jesuit. Obviously, the guy that we refer to a lot, Father Rohr, is a Franciscan.
Right.
But there's a lot of common language
there.
Oh,
my gosh, yeah. And he talks about that a lot in his book, Jesuit Guide to Almost Everything.
Oh, man.
So good.
That one's next on my list.
You're going to love it, man.
I'm so excited.
It's really good.
I've been reading 7 Last Words, An Invitation to a Deeper Friendship with Jesus. And I've been really enjoying this one. It's a very short book.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a small book.
I like small books.
It's kind of cute.
A little snack.
It's cute. Yeah. It's a little snack book.
Yeah. It's like a charcuterie.
But yes, before moving on to Jesuit's Guide to Almost Everything.
Oh yeah, you were telling me about this, about how some of the like when he talks about how like the abandonment of Jesus on the cross, you said that there were some really good insights there that were blowing your mind.
Yeah, so what he does is he breaks down the 7 last confirmed words that Jesus said before he was crucified, and really like focuses in on each of those things and kind of like maybe looks at some different angles. Like the abandonment, you know, on the cross, like, you know, we've had some other guests who've kind of talked about that a little bit before, like this moment where Jesus really has his own moment almost of deconstruction where he feels abandoned, and where is God, you know, where are you now?
Yeah.
You know, have you left me behind? You know,
right.
But he takes kind of a different approach. I think the way he kind of looks at it is, you know, of almost concern, will my followers continue the work that I have started? Mm. You know, will they continue on after I'm gone?
Like, how could they survive this?
Yeah.
Like viewing this atrocity on this terrible Friday, how could they ever get over this?
Yeah.
Man.
It's good stuff. I highly recommend it. You can blow through this book in like a day and a half. It's pretty quick read, so.
Yeah, I'm a really big fan. One of the other things that I like about Jesuit spirituality is we love people that like push to the fringes of whatever a movement is currently locked into some status quo, and somebody comes in and taps into something that awakens a new like push toward, you know, further out. And he was literally like basically like Ignatius was essentially condemned as a heretic like early on, like
yeah,
because he said people do not need the presence of God mediated to them by the church. God deals he said the creator deals directly with the creature.
Whoops.
Through your experiences, through your desires, through, you know, thought life, through creation itself. Like he was kind of like the first one that ever said everything is spiritual. Like that is literally an Ignatian idea that everything is spiritual. Have you ever heard anybody say that before?
Rob Bell didn't invent that? Are you serious?
He may have not even known that because, I mean, I think Rob was honestly coming from more of like a Hebrew, like Jewish kind of idea. But I mean, point being, if you're going to let the spirit or, you know, awakening or enlightenment or realization truly lead you, people are probably going to think you're getting in trouble. People are probably think you're pushing too far. And we wouldn't have this rich tradition of the Jesuits if it wasn't for a guy that wasn't, you know, basically willing to let the Roman Catholic Church, the papacy, the Pope himself, completely misunderstand him. And yeah, I mean, yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah, that's so good. I've really enjoyed this one. We've had kind of an interesting mix of guests over the last like month or so. Well, you guys don't know who we've been interviewing because we have a ton of stuff in the can right now, but it's been an interesting blend. I mean, obviously we've had some Jewish rabbis recently, really kind of like touching on things from, you know, this Jewish perspective that's, I think, been very refreshing.
Yeah. The radical theology, Jewish perspective, like Jewish mysticism in the light of the Death of God movement of the 60s. I mean, come on, people. That is so good.
I was gonna say, don't ever complain that we don't have enough variety in this show.
Seriously. Let me tell you. Seriously.
You don't even know what's coming. But anyway, yeah, this was a lot of fun.
This definitely got me going, man. I mean, I think one of the cool things about this, and I hope you guys enjoy this, like you're always kind of watching John and I's journey, like whether you know it or not, progress like before your very ears. Because if we get a guest on and we try to research and kind of know what's going on with the guest, we're listening, learning new things, and being pushed to new areas of our enlightenment, our construction or reconstruction or, you know, whatever. And it is the excitement you hear coming through these mics and your speakers is because we're just finding out a lot of this stuff, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're gonna have an opportunity very soon, actually, hopefully right around the time this podcast releases. Brand new website launch coming at you.
So soon. So
if
check,
not
check
now,
it out.
Soon.
Yes. Keep checking, and we'll you know, tweet on social media and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But we have got Ryan Battles is a listener. He's local.
What a beast.
And he's a beast of an internet website designer. Doing this for us and making us look pretty on the interwebs, and just really just touching, you know, his level of support, and he's amazing.
Yeah. So www.deconstructionist.com or thedeconstructionist.com. Yeah. It's going to be, hopefully when we're done with it, will be one beautiful, seamless, shiny one-stop shop for everything. So you'll be able to connect with us on social media through there. You'll be able to connect to our Patreon campaign that's about to launch. You'll be able to connect to our store. So if you want some sweet t-shirts or whatever we happen to have up there, if you want to actually listen
to the episode,
you'll be able to do it right through the website. Or if you, if you're new and if you want to subscribe to iTunes or any number of other podcast listening services, you'll be able to click a button and literally it will take you there.
Patreon.
So yeah, Patreon will be coming very, very soon. We have some really cool packages for you guys. You know, if you want to be a part of it, we're gonna have some exclusive swag and some exclusive opportunities to really be a part of the podcast and help move this thing forward. And if you didn't see, we had a survey going on social media, on Facebook and Twitter. So we are trying to figure out for the future, you know, where we can make some live shows outside of Columbus. So if you guys want us to come to your city, let us know. And we're going to start looking at areas where, you know, we can feasibly make that happen, where there's enough deconstructionist listeners that would come out to listen to us babble at you in person. So
it's going to be so much fun. We've got so many treats in store.
You guys have no idea.
It's just, you know, we say this a lot, but if you're listening to this show, you might be in a place where you just need some safety. You just need some openness. You just need some curiosity. You just need to hear something new, hear something fresh, get filled up somewhere. We hope you find that here. We know that every time we even see people tuning in, listening to this show, tweeting at us, sending us love on you know, whether donations or emails or reviews or things like that. I mean, you guys just don't even know the amount of affirmation and fuel for our tanks and just purpose and just love that we feel from that. I mean, it is no joke. John and I are, dude, we're overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, the fact that, you know, there are a lot of new listeners, I think, who have kind of picked up on us over the last few months. And so for those of you guys that are new to us, you know, welcome. You know, thank you for joining us. We hope that you found a safe place here. And yeah, this is something that Adam and I do outside of our full-time jobs and our families and other stuff. I mean, we're recording this at 10 o'clock at night.
Because it's the only time we can. The other side of town when we're done here. But it's the least I can do because John does almost everything else.
Adam and I are trying to figure out a way that we can live closer together. So
community living, dude. I'm telling you.
See?
Community living.
Part of the collective.
The deconstructionist community house.
That's phase two of the collective. Where we convince Rabbi Art Green and Father James Martin to move here to start the collective.
Dude, the deconstructionist abbey.
It'll just be... Yes! Perfect. I like it.
It needs to be Trappist, though. We'll have to brew beer.
Oh,
we'll get the guys from Bros Bibles and Beer. I think Zach Crater.
Yeah.
That brewed some delicious double IPAs or whatever and sent them to us. Like,
but Trappist ale is a whole nother ballgame.
I know.
That's beyond an IPA. It's
super regulated.
Do it, dude.
No.
No.
Well, we love you guys. Thanks for hanging with us. Thanks for listening to Father James Martin. Get his books. I'm telling you, check out his Twitter, and you will be so glad you... I don't care where you're at. The great thing about Jesuit spirituality, one last plug, you don't need to be a believer. You don't need to be a Catholic. You don't need to be anything to benefit from the unbelievable, curious, wonderful, brilliant, optimistic, great approach that is so practical and simple that the Jesuits bring to a richness into life. I can't advocate for it enough.
Yeah. I love it.
That's a mic drop. If this mic wasn't on a stand, I kind of want to knock it over. Just, so much fun doing this. We love you guys.
Yeah.
For now, we're your hosts.
I'm John Williamson.
And I'm Adam Narlock.
Love you guys.
Love you guys.
In her arms you'll never starve, you'll never freeze, and when the world is hard, you can fall asleep there. In a world of chaos, she could be a silence. The oceans of her kindness, they will pull you under. They will pull you under. Thank you. turn back? What if you can't turn back when you're finally tired of running? Tired of running. What if you can't turn back? What if you can't turn back when you're finally tired of running? What if you can't turn back? You will never starve. You will never freeze. And when the world is hard, you can fall asleep there. In a world of chaos, she could be your silence. The oceans of her kindness, they will pull you under.
How to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.